The G-Men podcast brings you inside our community and lets you listen in on the conversations that empower men to win in life and business.
Sometimes we can't wait for people to come to us. We got to go to them. Let's go. As a man, you gotta have critical thinking in a time of crisis. Be conscious of who you are connecting. Any crisis, you got what? The brotherhood. G-Man! G-Man!
I felt like quitting, man, during that year. He was born in 09. So I felt like quitting between 2012 and 2013, bro. When I went an entire year of not seeing my baby boy, that's when I knew that I was officially an alcoholic. Like at the time, some people can buy liquor and they keep some bottles at the crib. Oh, come through, B, come through, double D, you know what I'm saying? We're gonna drink tonight, watch the game. Not Danny. If I had liquor on the shelf, I was going to drink it.
This call is going to be interesting because we are talking about the joys of fatherhood and living in the moment of that leadership. I think sometimes without knowing it, some fathers betray their leadership role because, you know, things get hard. We're men in America. This country is not necessarily geared for family and manhood to thrive. But that's not an excuse for us to drop the ball in a role that only you could fulfill. Now, if you do have children, your children could have multiple stepdaddies. You know what I'm saying? It can keep going, but they can only have one daddy. You know what I'm saying? And I think without knowing it, at times, that role has been divorced from the truth of what it produces. Something I always say to fathers who are struggling with the idea of, you know, if their children like them or not, or are they leading correctly? I'm like, look, somebody LeBron James daddy, somebody. And because life lies and all the things that just try a man's soul, tried him. He didn't have the relationship with his LeBron James. Like, this is his son that he could have had. And how many of us are getting beat out of the legacy that producing a child guarantees? Because too many times we forget that it's not about how the relationship started with your child. It's how it ends. And if you're on your deathbed and your child has no regard to be next to you, then it shows a lot of how you lived in terms of leadership and training and the legacy you put into them. And I think a lot of times we care so much about children when they're babies and when they're little. And by the time they hit the teenage years, people are tapping out. We pretend they don't need us. And the reality is they need you more between 13 and 18 than they ever did between 0 and 10. And I think that Dana will help us align with that idea and just truly talk about not just some of his growth-throughs, but the growth that occurred in being a father and being a father who leads full-time by just committing to the process, even when it was difficult. And I think you'll be able to tell that story better than most, Dana. So your call. Go for it.
First things first, greetings. I just want to say, aside from this talk or anything, it feels great to be on the call because fortunately, I have had a tutoring appointment every week this past year on Monday nights during the call. So that's a good thing for business. But, you know, the fellowship is one thing that I miss. And so I want to say thank you Bernard for reaching out to me. For my experience, and I'll go ahead and walk in it and say my expertise, but it's one of those pieces of expertise that you're learning it day by day. You get a level of information and then you've got to apply it. So you got to keep going back and applying that information. So I want to definitely shout out you, Bernard, for inviting me into this space to talk. I want to shout out Coach Kendall just for walking in his leadership. And the idea of the G, I want to shout out each and every brother that's a member of the G that's on this call, those that will join late, those that may not be able to join the call, and any brothers that I haven't really had the opportunity to interact with because of my absence on the Monday night call. So this is definitely an honor and a privilege. It's something that I've been looking forward to. And this is a journey that I'm becoming more and more passionate about sharing. Maybe even more than my passion for teaching mathematics now, man, because this is so, it comes so natural to walk in this because I live it every single day. So I want to start out by I'm 39 and I remember being in college, right? Usher was that dude back in the day. Usher's still a talented dude, but Usher had an album called Confessions, right? And so on Usher's Confessions album, I wasn't able to find the clip, but he had a part in this album. So he's in the studio and in the video, he's writing, he gets a phone call. And so the girl is basically telling him like, I'm pregnant. He like, man, quit playing, whatever, you know? And so she's like, no, I'm serious. He's like, are you serious? And she's like, yeah. He was like, all right, I'll hit you back. So then he goes into a piece of where he says, you know, one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life is tell the woman that I love that I'm having a baby by a woman that I barely even know. I actually have lived that. I have lived that. That's a major part of this journey, right? And that's how this journey kind of started. So let's go back. I'm going to take you all back to 2003, 2004, right? I was a senior in college. Feeling good. I'm a member of a fraternity. We got the hottest fraternity on the campus. I got some rank as far as academically because I'm a senior, so I know the ropes of campus. And we were doing great things, man. I had my own car, had a crib off campus, way away from campus because my brother, who was in the military, he decided to get stationed in Fayetteville and buy a crib, right? So I'm a ladies' man. And, you know, at times there are privileges that comes with having fraternity letters on your chest. So, you know, I meet this girl. And when I meet her, you know, I get at her. We have an exchange, things like that. We start kicking it. And over time, I actually start getting phone calls because things start getting serious with this girl. Now, keep in mind, I find out this girl is from D.C., and at the time, I didn't like DC girls. I felt like they were cocky, arrogant, and all kinds of other things, man. But she wasn't the typical DC girl that I knew. And so we got close. And as we got close, we started to build a relationship, got into an official relationship. And so I can remember clear as day walking on campus one day. And I was in the middle of campus, and you had to walk across the railroad tracks over to the second side of campus. So there's the Taylor Science Building, which is right to my left, which is a major place across the middle of Fayetteville State University, for those of y'all that can see my shirt. And I got a phone call from one of my line brothers, right? And he says, Dane, I just seen some female driving your car, man. What's up with that? Everything good? I said, yeah. I gave her the keys, man. Like, she good, but I appreciate you checking on it. So this relationship builds. Well, at the end of that school year, some things happened for her. She was an out-of-state student, so tuition was much higher. She ended up having to leave and go back to D.C. Wasn't the most exciting news for me, but she had gone through a lot of trials and tribulations as far as staying in school. She ended up getting an apartment up the street from the campus, and we built. You know, we had a good relationship. That was my dog. Like, it wasn't like a typical relationship for me. Like, that was actually my homie. I liked kicking it with her and things like that. So we have a conversation. She's like, listen, I got to go back to Maryland because of everything that's going on. So I'm like, all right, you know, it is what it is. So we have this agreement that we're still going to work on the relationship, but she's just going to be there. Cool. Fast forward. She's gone. I immediately go into doing my thing. Like, I'm like, all right, my girl is gone, so I can play. You know what I'm saying? I can do my thing, entertain the other ladies and things like that. And I met this girl. I'll never forget. She was talking to my older brother. My oldest brother was on campus with me at the time. And I walk up. She got a ponytail down to her butt, man. She was tough. And my brother's talking to her. So I walk up and I immediately see what's going on. So I jump into player mode, right? So this girl, I meet her. Now, mind you, I'm still officially in the relationship with the previous girl from D.C. But of course, hey, we got a don't ask, don't tell policy. You know what I'm saying? So I start, I get involved with the girl, the new girl, right? And 3 months in, she's pregnant. I get the phone call that she's pregnant. So you're probably thinking, well, wait, how did that go? You in a relationship, you got somebody else pregnant. Well, the thing was, is I actually, in my mind, ended the first relationship, the long distance relationship, because of some information that I got. But I never told her directly. So it wasn't explicitly stated like, this is over. I'm about to do my thing. I just started, and I was already entertaining the girls all along, but I kept it, you know, under control. It was just when she left, things got reckless, you know. And so I get the phone call 2 weeks before I'm graduating from school, because I graduated in the fall. And so I got the phone call, Dana, I'm pregnant. What you mean? Really? So we have the conversation, and I was like, say, just like Usher did, I'm like, all right, I hit you back. So I got to process this. And in my mind, the first thing I'm thinking, I'm like, dang, man, I'm about to graduate in 2 weeks. I don't need this. So instantly I go into the mode of, I'm trying to figure out how to get her to have an abortion. It doesn't work. That's the first time I really realized that you have no game, and anything that you think you could do as a man, a woman can do it better. So let's skip down the line a little bit, because I don't want to give you all the details, because I want to get more into the principles. So fast forward, I have this child, my first son, DJ. I'm just graduating from college. In fact, he was born my first day of work at one of my jobs, right? And everything's cool. His mother, not long after she finds out she's pregnant, she's like, my mother said I can't come home. So I was like, all right, cool. I got a crib. Hey, it's my baby. Move in with me. I'm about to be a dad. I'm going to make this thing work. So she moves in. My son is born. And as time goes on, I have to have that relationship with the other woman. I have to have that conversation with the other woman and pretty much let her know, like, listen, I got a baby on the way. So that's why I fell off the face of the earth, right? And so we're in this relationship, and we get to a point where this relationship is no longer working. It's toxic AF, like super toxic. And so there's a back and forth. She's leaving, then she comes back. She's leaving, she comes back. I got the upper hand the whole time because I got a career. She was a freshman in college. She went off to the military first, so she started college late. So I got the upper hand, and as the relationship is dwindling, I'm realizing that, whoa, we got to make some serious decisions. Now, this whole entire time, because of the friendship that I had with the first one, and let me go ahead and say their name, like Coach Bryce would say. So let me step back for a second. So Precious is my first son's mother. I know they wouldn't mind me saying their names. Narda is my first son's mother. Precious is my younger son's mother, right? So as I'm in this entanglement, so to speak, the thing is things with me and Narda, they dwindle. Me and Precious are still good friends. We've kind of patched up the whole situation about what I did. We're friends the entire time. We keep in contact. She's in a whole nother relationship. We chop it up. It is what it is. So as things come to an end with me and Narda, me and Precious are still talking on the phone from time to time. So there was this one period in time where Narda, she leaves. She says, I'm done with this. I'm gone. She packs up her things. She leaves, right? So somehow or another, I was able to convince her to leave my son, which worked out in my favor. But the entire time, nothing. I have no thoughts of even being in a relationship with Precious. At the time, I still had a house phone and a cell phone. So that week after Narda leaves, I actually call Precious from my home phone. She's just like, okay, this is your home phone? Boom, boom, boom. So it's all good. I'm single now. I can do my thing. Well, there was a monkey wrench thrown in this plan because Narda had no plans of coming back, but she ended up coming back about 2 weeks later. So there's this night. I'm chilling. I was drinking, smoking me a little weed, and it was like a Friday night, and I'm chilling. So me and Narda are at the house, and my cousin, who's a female, was outside with a guy she was talking to at the time. Phone rings. Narda answers the phone. Guess who's on the other line? It's Precious. She says, can I talk to Dana? Narda comes to me with the phone, throws the phone at me, and busts my lip. And I can remember looking, I'm standing up in the living room, and I can remember looking down at my brand new white tee and just seeing blood dripping down my shirt. And immediately I grabbed the phone, Narda's sitting on the couch, and I cocked the phone back, and I'm about to beat her in the head with the phone. Divine intervention had to kick in. Because as I was swinging my arm back, I look over to the right, and out of my peripheral, I see my son DJ. And I drop the phone, and I run outside, and I'm cussing, yelling, and everything. My cousin's like, cuz, what happened? So we call the sheriff. The sheriff comes, and now the sheriff is there. The sheriff is like, somebody has to leave. I said, all right, sir. My son is in there. His mother's in there. I'll leave. I leave for the night, and I'm gone. So all of this is going on, right? So this is basically to kind of give you the backstory of how toxic my relationship with my first son's mother was. And that's really just the beginning piece. So let's fast forward. Eventually she leaves for good. We're not together. I start entertaining Precious again. Precious is flying in once a week. At the time, she's working for the airline. She's flying in once a week. We're kicking it. And not long after, maybe a few months after, we start entertaining the idea of being back together, right? So we start entertaining that idea. The next thing I know, we're riding around looking for apartments. So now we're building again. And I remember she knew everything about Narda. She knew everything about I had a schedule with dropping him off, DJ off to see his mom, things like that. And I remember the first interaction of them both seeing each other face to face. And I was a little late to the drop off area to drop off DJ for his mom to pick him up after it was around the holiday season. Right. And so I remember I'm backed in to the parking lot. So Hardy's parking lot. Right. So I'm backed in. Her and her boyfriend pull up, and DJ's mom, Narda, she immediately gets out the car. And she starts going to town, yelling, fussing, all this kind of stuff. So Precious being the girl that she is, she jumps out the car, walks around, starts fussing back. So I'm sitting back and I'm looking and they going at it. And then now her boyfriend starts talking reckless. And so I'm sitting here and I'm like, whatever, trying to ignore the stuff. And he just drove me to a point. And I said, you know what? I'm about to handle this. And I visualized everything I was going to do to handle this matter with this dude at the time. And right before I made my move, I looked up and I realized we got four adults arguing, fussing, fighting in a Hardee's parking lot. And my child is still standing between the two cars. So I tell Preston, I said, get in the car. She hops in the car and I just pull off. So that's basically the backstory of how everything began, you know. And so then now fast forward, time goes by. Precious and I decide to get married. She's pregnant. Still dealing with the struggles of the battle between me and Narda and our issues with trying to co-parent because it was totally toxic and a bunch of other stuff, man. I went through custody with that. Went to a heavy custody battle with that, which was extremely toxic. So I'm trying to be married. I'm trying to balance being a father and getting him to his mother at times. And it's just getting heavy. So down the line, Precious and I, we start having problems. Now, she was already pregnant when we got married. So now I have two sons. I have a boiling toxic relationship with DJ's mother. And then now the relationship between Layla's mother, Layla is my younger son, the relationship between us is starting to fall apart. And so eventually Precious decides to leave. And it what was really, really hurting to me wasn't the fact that she left. It was that she left and now my son is gone. It was that she left 10 days before my birthday, which happens to be December 25th. So now I'm like at rock bottom, man. And I realized that I got to put this thing back together somehow. I don't know how. I got to put this thing back together. And I just remember the night the Precious father came to pick her up. I looked him in his eye and I said, Pops, I said, I'm going to take care of my child regardless. I said, you have my word on that. And so I went the following week. I went to the child support office. Sat down with someone, they showed me exactly what it was going to take, what I would have to pay, had an agreement with her. But so then I talked to her. I said, look, this is what I'm going to pay you every month. I'm going to put it in our joint account. Boom, 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 boom. So let's now want to transition into what, well, first of all, actually, I want to talk about some of the principles that I learned from that. In these situations, one of the main principles that I learned is that when we're in a relationship, and of course, I was 24, man. Maybe 25. I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about me. But one of the principles that I will offer to the brothers on here is that when you have made up in your mind that you're done with the relationship, say it. It's not always the easiest conversation to have, but we have to explicitly say, I'm no longer going to be in this relationship. Because a lot of times when it comes to women, even if it's bad, depending on their mind state, And the trauma that they've been through, they just like, okay, well, these are just normal things that happen in a relationship. We ain't really rocking with each other right now, but that's still my man. That's still my boo thing. So that's one of the principles that I got from that. The second principle that I got from that is we have to be mindful of how we intertwine multiple women. When you out here and you a player, I know you got good game and because I thought I had the most game. But at the same time, we have to be careful of how we intertwine these different women, because a lot of times what we can do is we can transition out of one relationship and we always kind of got something on the side. We got a little warm hole we can crawl in, as I like to say. Right. So we might not be in a relationship with this other woman, but at the same time, you know, that's the jump off. That's the side piece. So we kick it with them. They getting our attention. But it ain't no real relationships, and y'all got an understanding. So those are two of the things that I learned along the way. So then now we fast forward, and within a year's time in 2010, I had all these different things happen to me. So I had my wife decide she was leaving a week before Christmas, which happens to be my birthday, after I already decided I was going to be Santa Claus this year. I got everybody gifts like it's on. I'm feeling great. So now I hit rock bottom. Few months after that, I lose my job. And I lose my job because of something that was beyond my control. Somebody messed up some paperwork. So now I lose my job. After I lose my job, I have to move out of my brand new apartment, which was the penthouse, as I like to say. It was on the third floor, overlooking the pool. This was a brand new complex. I mean, life was good, man. Like Too Short say, it was all good just a week ago. And so I had to move out of my apartment. And fortunately, at the time, my older brother had some rental properties, right? But I called him and I say, bro, I said, is any of your properties open, man? I got to move because now I'm paying child support. I can't afford this crib no more. And he's like, yeah, I got one that's open. I said, man, can I move in? He was like, yeah. He said, I said, well, how much money do I need? He's like, well, it's under property management, but you just basically got to, he said, I'll tell them to waive the fee for you to get in. You just got to pay the first month's rent. So I move in the crib. I go from the penthouse overlooking the pool to a house that happens to be infested with roaches. And the property management team, they told him that they were going to clean it out, fumigating and everything, and get it ready for me. They never did. But because I got an emergency, I'm like, whatever, I clean it myself. Me and my kids move into the crib. So all of these things happen. So I'm jobless. I feel like I'm at rock bottom, man. And the first thing that I had to do was like, I was like, all right, I got my kids into this mess. And I need to figure out how I'm going to get myself out of this mess. I got this woman in this ear, yap, 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 yapping. I got this woman in this ear, yap, yap, yapping. I done had to go to custody court for my first son. I'm about to, I don't even realize that I'm about to have to get myself prepared to go to divorce court and then a separate custody court. Whole nother situation, man. And so I decided at that moment, I said, you're the common denominator. And it came to me that way because I'm a mathematician. In order to add or subtract fractions, you have to have the same denominator, right? So I'm thinking, okay, I got this woman, Narda, who's the mother of my first son. I got this woman, Precious, who's the mother of my second son. And guess what? They have been intertwined, but the only thing that they have in common is the fact that both of them have a child by me. So I got to figure out how to fix this. So in this, the first thing that I did was, and didn't even realize what I was doing at the time, I started working on my health. At the time, P90X was a big workout plan, right? So I sat in my crib every day and I did P90X. I didn't have no job, so I had plenty of time. Sat and did P90X. Whole time, I didn't realize what that was doing in my subconscious. It was helping me build consistency. It was helping me work on my physical fitness because I was, heck, I smoked hella weed. I love to drink, and actually, I became an alcoholic during that time. Drinking was my thing, but I really like to smoke weed than I like more than I like to drink. But I fell into a state of depression unknowingly, and I was drinking like every doggone day, man. Like my partners, a couple of my partners was married and stuff, and they my house was the spot. You want to get away from your wife and chill, get faded, come to Dane crib. You might have to listen to his stories about his baby mamas, but it is what it is. And so I started doing the P90X thing, still was drinking, smoking every day. And then I had this moment. One of my boys, man, he had just recently gotten married and he talked to me about this church that he attended. So I was like, all right, I'll go to church, man. So I went to the church and something resonated with me after probably like going twice. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna start going to church whole time. Not realizing I'm working on my spirit. So, and this is crazy when I think about this in hindsight, because I'm actually working on the core four without even knowing, you know what I'm saying? So I just started working on my health. Now I started working on my mind because now I'm focusing back on my spiritual journey and things started moving in a better direction, man. But throughout all of this, I ended up finding a new job. I still got all this situation going on. So probably about a year and a half after Precious left, the first year, everything was good. Whenever I wanted to see my son, she would let me come pick him up. Now, mind you, I had to drive all the way to Maryland, 5 hours away. I would wake up at like 5, 6 in the morning, go teach all day, drive all the way to Maryland, 5 hours, and then drive back 5 hours to Fayetteville because I just wanted to be in my house with my children together. So this was terrible at the time. Still drinking on the way to Maryland, grabbed me a little 24-ounce beer, Bud Ice. That was my thing at the time. On the way back, I get in the car. My kids kick it. I got me a blunt roll. After my kids fall asleep, smoke me a blunt. I'm going to get back to Fayetteville, North Carolina tonight by any means necessary. And so as this is happening, I'm like, man, this is just not what I want to see, man. It's got to be more to this, man. And so now, about a year and a half later, Precious decides she's going to cut off access to my son. And she chose a wonderful time to do it because, oh, once again, what's up with her in the Christmas holiday? Yeah, he can't go. We were supposed to be taking a trip to California. He can't go. And not only can he not go, I don't see my son for another year after that. My son's entire third year of his life, I don't get to see him. So now I got to go to court eventually. I'm sick and tired of it. I called her pops one time and I remember, and this resonated with me. I never forgot this story, man. I called her pops. I said, "Pops, check it out, man. I ain't seen my son in almost a year, man. And that ain't cool. Like I need you to help me out." And you know what he told me? He said, "Dane," he said, "I'm gonna be honest with you, man." He said, "I done already did my time." He said, "This is y'all business. Y'all got to figure it out." And it wasn't something that I wanted to hear, but I needed to hear that, because what he was saying was, first of all, I told you from day one that I remember, he said, he told me at my Reading reception, "She's yours now, dog." Those were his exact words. So now he basically was helping me see something that my mother and my grandmother taught me all along. You know, they used to say, "You make your bed, you got to lay in it." So that didn't work out in my favor. Finally, I'm like, "Look, man, I need an attorney." I had to break bread on an attorney, go through the battle with her back and forth. I finally get a custody order in place for my son. So here we are, mind you, the whole time I'm still dealing with custody battle with DJ's mom. You know what I'm saying? The whole time. That situation is nuts and all kind of mess going on with this. So I'm like, it was days that I felt like it was almost like they would just conspire. You know what? Check it out, girl. Let's just screw up his day. Like, let's just give him the business. I mean, it was terrible. And what did I do every time? Man, I'm about to give me some reefer. Give me some drink. Hey, I ain't going to be out in the streets. I'm going to be at the crib. Smoke and drink my problems away. But around 2015, I met this woman, because the whole time I just had women, but I didn't bring no women around my son. 2015, I met this woman. She was a little older, man. And things grew. I finally decided I'm going to get into a relationship with her. And as I got into a relationship with her, I realized, like, wait, in order for this relationship to work, I've got to settle some things with my kids' mothers. And so as things started to settle, I remember having conversations with this woman. And she was an older woman. And I would finally be open and vulnerable and say, "Hey, I feel this way. Hey, you know, I'm trying to do this. Was I wrong when I said that? Was I like, what's the deal?" And so she gave me some insight. And although that relationship didn't work, I was determined now at this point in my life, because when I got with her, that's when I really started my personal development journey. Like, I finally got introduced to ET at the time in 2015. So I'm listening to ET videos every day. Around that time, I also discovered Coach Kendall's IG. So I'm watching Coach Kendall's IG, always enjoyed his swag and how he would speak and things like that and how he would inspire us. So now I got all this. I got the motivation piece now. So, boom. Although this relationship didn't work out, I'm like, listen, I'm determined to figure out how I'm going to maneuver through this thing with these two women, because now my Precious is remarried. My son got a stepfather. I didn't hear my son call him daddy, so I'm heated. But I'm like, you still got to figure out what you got to do to maneuver through this situation. And as I started maneuvering through the situation, I realized that's when I started getting into the concept of, you got to build your tribe. And so my tribe became the people on the internet that were also fans of watching motivation, you know, watching ET videos, watching Coach Kendall videos. I think those were really the main two at the time. So I'm getting inspired. I'm starting to now feel my spirit and my mind with things between spiritual fulfillment at church, studying the Bible and praying on my own, still drinking, still smoking. But I'm growing. I'm listening to inspiration, TGIM. Couldn't wait to have TGIM, going in the classroom, talking to my students about it and things like that. And things started to shift, right? I'm learning how to better manage the situations that I'm facing with both of their mothers. And so I realized one day, it hit me. I would ask my sons, situation would happen, me and their mothers would get into it, right? And I couldn't wait to get my son back. And I would say, "Son, did you hear how your mom talked to me the other day?" "Yeah, Dad." "Well, how did she act afterwards?" "She act like nothing ever happened." "Really?" My other son. "Son, you hear how your mama was talking to me?" "Yeah, Dad." "How did she act afterwards?" "She act like nothing ever happened." So now I'm like, this is puzzling me, because I'm like, wait, I'm allowing them to ruin my day. And then now I go off into this funk to where I'm just drinking, I'm just smoking, and I'm down in the dumps, but they going on like nothing ever happened. So that's when I realized, like, wait, you can only control yourself. You can't control what they do. So you got to figure out what it takes to make you happy, what it takes to make you sane, what it's going to take to make you continue to grow. The other thing that I realized in that process, and this is one of those principles as well. My communication and the way that I operate with their mothers, that was going to be the first example that I showed my sons of how to treat a woman. The hard part about that was neither one of them was my woman. I had been in a relationship with them before, but neither one of them was my woman. So here I am having to maneuver with a woman that has been at times disrespectful, a woman at times that's been all kinds of mean things and treating me any kind of way. And I got to just take it on the chin, take it on the chin, take it on the chin. But I didn't know at the time I'm showing my sons how to really not let the way they feel affect the way they felt. They still at the time don't really realize all this stuff is happening, man. And so as time progresses, I continue to work on me. I'm on this personal development journey. And I remember, you know, that older woman that I was dating, one time I told her, I said, I was sitting on the side of the bed and I had been drinking, had been smoking. And I said, baby, I'm tired of this. And she was like, what? I said, I'm bigger than this. I'm better than this. I get high and drunk like every day. And she's like, she give me the rub me on my back and say, baby, it'll be okay. But that's not what I wanted. She was like, well, you know, you take care of your kids, you go to work every day. So, I mean, you ain't out driving around drunk and this and that and doing things like that. But that wasn't enough to me. I didn't need that answer. I needed an answer that was, or a response that was going to tell me there's more in you. I see more in you. And so that was when I determined, okay, I'm going to end this relationship, ended that relationship. And so now I'm really, really on this personal development journey. I'm reading more. I'm doing all these things to better myself. When I'm maximizing my time with my sons, not long after that relationship, beginning of 2017, I got sober. And in this sobriety journey, what helped me out was that I was determined that I didn't want my sons to use these same tactics to deal with their problems. So then now I'm still in the same city in Fayetteville, North Carolina, but I'm like, I gotta go. DJ's mom is gone. So I have no other reason to be stuck here in Fayetteville. And I was getting ready to, I had took a job to go teach in Kuwait. And at the time, neither one of their moms wanted me to take my sons with me. So I had a conversation with DJ. I said, son, I'm about to take this job. I said, do you want to go with me or you want to stay with your mom? And he said, dad, I really want to see what it's like to stay with my mom. At the time, he's in sixth grade. I said, okay. And so I set it up, took him to stay with his mom. And the whole time I'm like, you know, calling my son, seeing what's up. And it really worked out to where she was at a mind state. Now she was like, I can't do it. Like my timeline is up. He's a young man now. He needs to be with you. So I bring DJ back with me and I really start growing. 2017 was when I really got introduced. I went to, what year is this? 2018? 2018 was when I actually, I'm not sure when it was, but the one of the conferences I went to in LA. And that's when I got introduced to Coach Kendall, the G, and now we doing manhood. I got some brothers with me, and that was the early stages of the G. Like, but I got these brothers. I meet Bernard. I meet several different brothers that time, and so now I'm growing. I got community, and I'm realizing that I can do this journey. So fast forward to save a lot of the details because I really want to open it up for some questions now. Things start transitioning. I get to a point to where Precious is like, hey, remember that conversation we had years ago where I told you, you're going to have to take over? Yeah, it's time. He's going to middle school. He coming with you. So I'm blessed to be able to say I have both of my boys now And my boys, they look up to me. My children's mothers, we cool. I talked to both of them today. One of them was telling me about a gift she just ordered me for Father's Day. The other one, she said something today, and this was so dope to me. She said she was having a conversation with her father, and she said, my father was kind of concerned about some things with Leyland. She said, but I had to let him know when he was with me, you had to trust the environment that I had him in and who I had him around. She said, I told him, Dad, now I have to show him that same respect. And that resonated with me so much because I was tripping this morning because I called both of them. I was like, look, I need y'all to send me an email and tell me something. I need some evidence to show my brothers when I give this talk. So DJ's mom, she sent me an email. I'll read that next week because I want to break it down to show y'all how I got there. Leyland's mom didn't send me an email, but that conversation we had about 2 hours ago when she told me that, that's better than the email. And I made sure that I told her, thank you. There's a lot of other things that happened in this journey. I'll get into more specifics because I want to add them with the principles and the values and the steps on next week when we talk about it. But I really want to open it up for some questions and opinions, as a wise man once told me. So I'm ready for questions, B.
Yeah, what's going on, Dane? Man, I think we all was partly on an episode of Jerry Springer, partly on the brothers, you know what I'm saying? Partly the best man reunion, you know what I'm saying? We just all like feeling every bit of the story. But I remember when I reached out to you and I said, hey, Dane, you know, Father's Day is coming up. I'd love for you to share how you became a man that both your baby mothers can love. You know what I'm saying? And yep. I think as you describe what it costs, I love that Anthony was dropping the principles in the chat as you were sharing them, because you had to do some things and it didn't have anything to do with anybody else.
Not at all.
You know, and I think as men, you know, most of us grow up around people who readily share their excuses, and that could rub off on us. And so instead of controlling what we can control, thinking what we can think, doing what we can do, just like them, you know, we puff, puff, pass. We stop for that Bud Light in line, and we just
yes, sir.
Medicate our pain versus feeling the pain that is telling us something has to change, feeling the pain that is focusing us. Now, I love that you talked about it as a journey. My first question for you is, where in that journey did you feel most like quitting? You know, you took us through maybe a 5-7 year period of time, and bro, you was getting the business. You know what I'm saying? Your business, man. and then you got sons. So I've seen this in my own daddy's eyes. There's nothing worse than disrespecting a man in front of his son. In front of his son. And you described that your left ear was getting one piece of it, your right ear was getting one piece of it, but today you have evolved into being someone who both your baby mamas can love and honor. So when did you most feel like quitting, and what kept you going?
I felt like quitting, man, during that year. Let me see, he was born in 09. So I felt like quitting between 2012 and 2013, bro. When I went an entire year of not seeing my baby boy, that's when I knew that I was officially an alcoholic. Like at the time, I didn't, you know, some people can buy liquor and they keep some bottles at the crib. Oh, come through, B, come through, double D, you know what I'm saying? We're going to drink tonight, watch the game. Not Danny. If I had liquor on the shelf, I was going to drink it. And I felt like quitting because it was like she hit me. That's a shot to the nuts. You just hit me in the nuts because you didn't let me see my child. I've done everything within my power, and I'm paying child support the whole time. I felt like quitting, man. My son's third year, and he still doesn't fully know the effects of that. He don't really, because he was only three. But that's when I felt like quitting the most, man, because I was still dealing with the stuff that I was dealing with DJ's mom. And I'm having, and on top of that, I'm having to go through all of this and go deal with children every single day. So yeah, that was probably the lowest point where I was like, man, the hell with all this.
Let me follow up with this, Dana, and thanks for being both visible and vulnerable. One, I couldn't imagine that. And two, do you think it was, I feel I can provide a better environment for our son at three than you could? Or was it just vindictive? I'm going to cut you because I can.
Vindictive. Absolutely vindictive. And another part of it at the time was that was actually when she initially got involved with the guy that she ended up marrying. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And so that was another piece. I also found out later on she got pregnant that year. And it's interesting how things would happen, man, because something in my spirit would tell me at times when my kids' mothers was shooting me wolf tickets, somehow they always ended up exposing themselves. But during that year, it was definitely vindictive, but that was also the year that she was pregnant with her second son.
Mm. Okay. Any questions for Dana? I mean, I don't want to hog the conversation. Feel free to take yourself off mute and go.
Dana, I want to thank you for sharing, man. You know, you and I done had several conversations about this.
Yes, sir.
The question for me is, like, how did you feel when you was going through that system and how it treated you? And what coping mechanisms did you use to, like, keep your sanity?
That's a good question. I felt very low, man, I felt very low because, number one, it was hard walking into that courtroom with DJ's mom. At home at the time, me and Layla's mom, our marriage was cool, but I still had to put on this total different aura and everything when I walked into that courtroom. Bruh, our relationship was so toxic. The judge ordered, we had to meet at this place to drop my son off. I remember she would have to go into the back door. I would have to go into the front door, drop him off. She would be inside the building in a room and I had to leave and then she had to leave. So that, I dealt with that. Then we fast forward. I remember standing in front of the judge in divorce court and my mother was a clerk of court. My mother was the one that helped me do this. My mother said, son, you can get the custody order and all put into one and the divorce. So I had everything prepared. And I remember the Judge Tucker. I'll never forget. Judge Tucker had red hair. And I said, well, ma'am, you know, I have instructions for how I want us to divide custody as well. She said, that's a separate court matter. And I felt low, man. I felt it was a very hard feeling. And I felt really disrespected in both of those situations, man. My coping mechanisms, weed, alcohol, sex, you know what I'm saying? And I had plenty of women. My children just didn't know. So weed, alcohol, sex, those are probably my top three. You know what I'm saying? Women, because I felt like these two main women that were in my mind coming for me, I made sure that I kept my women that were on the side and things like that. I made sure that they were women that were stroking my ego. You know what I'm saying? So that's the crazy part about it. I had women on my team that were stroking my ego. That's a good question.
All right, go for it, Anthony, and I'll take the next one.
Yo, can you hear me clearly?
Loud and clear, Ant. What's up, brother?
What's up, man? Yo, this is dope. I think for me, as somebody that's coming into leadership and I think being around family right now, it's interesting just to see just the responsibility and I guess the story. Like I was listening, it was very visual for me. So I appreciate your vulnerability as you were sharing.
Right on.
My question to you is, I feel like also has a very high sex drive and can be a rather, I guess, addictive personality. What was something, or how do I phrase this? What drive do you to really transition or transmute that energy constructively into more positive things rather than fall back upon sex and weed? And 'cause I've been there and I've had my plethora of seasons where that was my coping mechanism. So as I'm transitioning now, I'm curious to see from you, as you've gone through it, what has helped you to just channel that energy constructively into things that will build you up versus keep you stagnant, like as you were saying. Does that make sense?
That's a phenomenal question. And you just took me back to something, man. When I was in that relationship with the older woman, it exposed me to a lot of things. It exposed me to another side of life. Because there was a point in time where I felt like, man, I'm just a little teacher. And now I got two kids by two women. Ain't a woman gonna want to be with me, at least not a woman that's doing some things with her life. And so I remember during that time, I started reading more and listening to audiobooks. And one of the first books that I listened to was, Napoleon Hill. Y'all know it. Why is my brain going? Thinking Grow Rich. The Devil. I didn't get to that one yet. That took me some years to get to. But Think and Grow Rich has a chapter on... It has a chapter on sex transmutation, right? And I realized, like, wait, whoa, bro. You letting women drain you. You know what I'm saying? So that was one of the things that resonated with me. But when I got to that part of becoming sober, what made me stick to being sober, Aunt, was that I remember growing up, man, it was a rite of passage to be able to get to the point where I could smoke a joint with my uncle. You know what I'm saying? One of my uncles in particular. So that was something that we looked forward to in Oakland, to be able to, I got Make Me Happy tattooed across my chest, right? With a Budweiser crown, because my grandfather, the most influential man in my life, he drank Budweiser. And his thing was, he would say, Dana, make me happy. That meant go get him a beer. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, mate, wait. And I had this moment. I said, you know what? The best thing that I could do to carry on my grandfather's legacy, if he was here to this day, he would say, son, and these would be his exact words. Fuck that alcohol. Fuck that weed. Be the best possible educator you can be. My grandfather would be more proud of me being a teacher and a father that's in my children's life than any other thing that he would be proud of me. And when I realized that part, that was what made me say, you know what? Nah, I don't want to pass down the rite of passage being, oh, man, can't wait till I can smoke with my dad. Whoa, man, can't wait till I can drink with my dad. Whoa, man, can't wait till me and my dad can go out to the bar and holler at females. So I wanted to have a different rite of passage for my sons. And truth be told, and I had a vision, man. It wasn't a dream. It was a vision. In this vision, DJ, I walked up to him one day and we were in the house and I could tell he was high. And I was like, whoa, hold up, son. You lost your mind? So that's what we doing now? We smoking? And he looked me dead in my eyes. And he's taller than me. And he said, you do it. You've been doing it all my life. So I thought it was cool. And when I had that vision, I said, I got to stop, because I don't want to be one of the things that bothered me about a lot of the adults. We grew up in our era. It was do as I say, not as I do. And I got sick and tired of that. I felt like that was BS, man. And so for me, I was like, you know what? I got to stop, because I can't respond to my children and flash out and flip out on them if they doing exactly what they told, what they saw me do. See, as men, a lot of times we want our sons to grow up and we want to be their superhero, but we don't want to own up to the BS that they see us do and they start doing. We want them to do the good things. Oh man, I'm a great father. I'm a great professional. I'm a great this, I'm a great that. But when they're a great drinker, and they can chug beers all night, and they can do beer bongs and take seven shots of tequila in one night and holler at three females and take one home that they met the first night. We don't want to own up to that BS. When they in the streets, when they selling dope, when they doing the other things that they done heard all the war stories about us doing, we don't want to own up to that. So those were the things that kept me and keep me to this day. My sons hold me accountable for remaining sober. My sons hold me accountable. Me and them. Great question, Ant.
We're going to let that breathe. We're going to let that breathe just a bit. I think so many men don't understand that you can have your kids stolen from you. And we have a country that this is the legacy of this country. It's called slavery. It's called ripping families apart. And I think when we see a lot of these modern systems, we assume it can't be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he's going through that, he must have had did something to deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Reading The Souls of Black Folks by W.E.B. Du Bois, and he talks about the legacy of this history and the laws that had to be passed to take human beings that were once enslaved to be free, prosperous, self-sufficient human beings. And I think sometimes in those processes, we forget that the systems are designed by those who, while they have good intentions, they want to protect their point of view, you know? And so a lot of times we see that women, especially initially, are more interested in doing the child rearing and to have families, especially young. And it takes men sometimes to get over themselves to really say, I'm going to do this. I'm the best for this job. Now, let me ask you this, Dana. I'm going to wait till you catch your breath. I don't want you to die on the call. That's not a good look. Get your breath. But I want to ask this. Do you feel, had you been given the opportunity to be full-time in your children's life, their entire life, you would be in a better state and they would be in a better state? Or do you think, had you been given that opportunity from day one, you would have dropped the ball?
Great question, B. Looking back at this journey now, I would have dropped the ball. One of the things I say a lot of times is that I've seen, I say it was meant for me to not know my biological father. Because had I had a relationship with my biological father, I probably wouldn't take fatherhood as serious as I take it now. Had I been either still married to, let's just say, Layla's mom, right? Had I still been married to her and I got both of my kids in the house, I could have dropped the ball because I could have been in a state of mind where home was good. I'm a public success and a private failure. I'm running around. Got women on the side, cheating on my wife, things like that. And or even worse, things between my wife and I become toxic and my sons see that. And I drop the ball in the sense of I'm not that man that my sons look up to and admire. So I think that I could have possibly dropped the ball. So when I look back on it now, it was all worth it because it a lot of these principles, when we read them in books, and we hear them from our coaches, our mentors, and things like that, they sound good. They sound cliche. And we repeat them. And we say, don't let the way you feel affect the way you flow. We say, what do you want with your life? You know what I'm saying? What are you willing to sacrifice? But it's not until we actually grow through these things. And as we grow through them, now they become applicable. We have some experience with them. So I like the process, as Ink talks about, I'm living the process. If it wasn't because me fearing that they're going to take my children, I wouldn't have stopped. There were times where I stopped smoking weed because I knew that if they wanted to really get, they mothers knew I smoked weed. They know I love reefer. So guess what? Hey, Judge, he smokes weed all the time. So that's how I became an alcoholic, because there was a period I stopped smoking weed for like 2 years back then, right? They not gonna test me about alcohol. So I'm drinking. I'm drinking and smoking cigarettes. But the thing is, you know, back to that question, I would have dropped the ball because I wouldn't have had as much to strive for. Everything I had was right there in the house. My kids were my everything. Their wives, we'd be all right. We can make it through. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times the children are more important to us than the wife in some cases. But I think I would have dropped the ball, man. And that would have been actually, that would have been more detrimental to my children than what they saw me go through without being with their mothers.
That's solid, Dana. Before you close us out, Dana, I want to ask this one. Okay, so you're a grandfather now, and your son's passed the test. They had you as an example, but you noticed that one of your grandsons caught the 20 to 24 year old Jana D. You know what I'm saying? So he always got you like. Grandson, you just introduced me to another lady the other day. Thanksgiving, you had one lady. Christmas, you got another lady. What's going on? And you see this pattern. You see this generational legacy that you like, that's not what we do now. But you clearly can identify it, you know, so you see it. And he's not being disrespectful. He's just, he's young, as we say. Boys will be boys, as we say. Take us through that conversation. How would you talk to that young man, knowing that you did it? You know what I'm saying? Don't talk to him like you 65 and you done did some things in your life, sitting on multiple millions that you gonna will him. And so you sounding like holier than thou and your shit don't stink. We gotta say, right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know the journey. And this young man, he got the good looks, you know what I'm saying? He by the coastal. He got the swag. He got the hair, the beard coming in. He 20, 24, you know, and he's like, Granddad, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not with these women. We're dating. You said we could bring somebody to the family get together. So I just brought two different somebody. How will you have that conversation with him, Dana? Knowing that you know what you know and you went through what you went through and you grew through what you grew through. How would you have that conversation?
Great conversation and great timing. I would have that conversation in multiple parts. One part of it would be just grandfather to grandson, and that conversation would be, son, I understand that you are single and you can do what you want with these women. If they're down for it, you do what you want. But understand, grandson, the choices that you're making now, you're planting seeds. And some of these seeds, you don't necessarily know what fruit is going to grow from these seeds. It's almost as if you grab these different packs of seeds, but they have no labels on them. You just know they're seeds. We don't know if they're apple seeds, orange seeds, lemon seeds, whatever. But you're planting seeds. And eventually, you're going to see a tree that bears fruit from these seeds. And you want to be mindful of what fruit is possibly going to grow from these trees. The more you spread yourself thin, what I can see now is there's something else that is underlying under the surface of what's going on. So let's now have a talk, grandson, because you're grown. You're no longer in your father's house. And if you are, that's fine. But let's talk about some things that maybe we didn't get a chance to have a conversation about, because at the end of the day, I learned from my own experience when I was dealing with women, a lot of women, there was something underlying. I was chasing something. And that actually, that gets into some of the principles I'm going to cover next week. You're chasing something, son. And I need you to really, really figure out and get to the bottom of what is missing in your life that you're looking for from these different women. Now, if you want to shop around before you purchase a car, that's fine. But understand that when you bring them to this family function, when you bring them to granddad's house, they're taking that in as something way more. You might just want to show granddad and dad, like, eh, I keep a baddie with me like y'all showed me. But understand, you're planning something because you're making an impact. She's taking it way more than just, oh, we going to the family barbecue. She's taking it as, whoa, I met his father. I met his grandfather. I met his mother. So now she's planning. So yeah, that's a great conversation. And then at some point, I'm going to have to bring his dad in there and say, all right, son, let's go back. What's some of the things I taught you? And what example have you set? You know what I'm saying? What have you shown? How have you applied the principles that I've taught you? And how have you maybe dropped the ball on some things or some things that you've shown? But so because we need to get down to whether he's just doing his own thing and how can we give wise counsel to him so that he doesn't allow his purpose to be diminished by chasing skirts.
You have been listening to the G-Men podcast. Like, review, and share this episode if something you heard challenged you to grow and positioned you to lead. The G-Men community exists to allow men to connect through group coaching, training calls, online workshops, and location-based retreats. Join the movement at gmenworldwide.com.